From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Monday morning when I got a Google News alert from the University of Iowa. Researchers there were announcing that they could be looking at a kind of breakthrough when it comes to understanding Parkinson's disease. They say that cells located in the intestine trigger an immune response that could help preserve and protect neurons whose impairment is known to cause Parkinson's. What does this mean? Well, like any study, we need to learn more before we declare any major victories. And with Parkinson's, there have been major gains, but also some setbacks. Here's what we do know. Parkinson's affects nearly a million people in the United States, roughly 60,000 new cases every year. It hits men more often than women, but certainly hits both. Tends to come on around age 60, but of course that varies. And while we wait for more research and more success, we have to become a community that is more welcoming to people with the disease. This hour, it's a conversation about just how well Rochester and Western New York is doing at being what we might call Parkinson's friendly when it comes to awareness, when it comes to removing social isolation. And we'll tell you about moving day that's coming up. So I've got a lot to talk about. Let me go ahead and welcome my guest for the hour. Dennis Whitney is the president of the National Parkinson's Foundation of Greater Rochester and the primary caregiver for his wife. Dennis, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Bill Carpenter's here. He's a board member of the foundation. Bill, welcome to you.
Thank you. And I'm also a caregiver for my wife, Flo.
And Flo's here. Flo Dorsey is living with Parkinson's since when, Flo? When's the diagnosis for you?
It was 2011.
Very good. So 5 years for you. And Michelle Burak is here, assistant professor of neurology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Michelle, welcome to you as well.
Thanks so much, Evan.
2011, what was that day like for you, Flo?
Well, it was kind of surreal there, Evan. It's hard to believe when you're diagnosed with it and you don't know a lot about it. I mean, I had to go research it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the symptoms. I didn't know how long a person had to live. And I was thankful for my husband, Bill, who has been always very supportive. But as I went along, I went to the library. I researched different websites that dealt with Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to, it was hard, I didn't want to admit it. And what I'd like to ask you, Evan, mm-hmm. is when you hear about Parkinson's, what symptoms do you think is Parkinson-like?
I think for many Americans who don't have it directly in their immediate family, most of us think of people like Michael J. Fox. I think when you've got a celebrity who's got an awareness, I give him a lot of credit for at least being a public face, a positive face, who has at least shown us that. But I don't know if that's perfectly representative. I don't know what timelines and typical progression is like. So that's probably a very rudimentary answer to that. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who would say that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I didn't know what it was. My friends, my family didn't know what it was. And I am so happy to be a part of this group here to help make awareness the National Parkinson's. And the doctor here, Dr. Michelle, is very knowledgeable. And I'm hoping she can explain things that people don't understand.
Sure.
And us. And I'd like to express fatigue. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to smell anymore. I have a lot of anxiety and depression. Swallowing is a problem. My voice isn't the same. It's kind of not as loud. There's a lot of stiffness and pain. And in my movements, and I have tremors, and I also have dystonia and sleep problems. And I'm just so glad there's so much support here in Rochester for to help me.
Flo, have those become more acute over time?
Yes. It wasn't as bad when I was first diagnosed, but as the years go by, yes, it does. It is difficult.
You know, I walked into this room and you gave me this big hug. And you're this big ball of energy, and it was a great way to come into the studio, I have to say. I wish every guest in here hugged me. Some guests would like to do the opposite.
Well, you know what, though, Evan? You're so thin that I almost I couldn't find you.
You're not going to break me for that. It's okay. But, you know, I know you say, you've dealt with depression as well, and there's probably highs and lows that come with it. In those early days for you, what scared you the most?
When I was going to die with this disease. And what was I going to have to give up, you know, of my life? you know, what parts of, you know, the good times, the bad times, you know, anything, my family, you know, working, just going on vacation, you know, all those things come to, you know, right in front of you, and you're like, you just want to know when and how. And it is sad. But like I said, there's help. There's people around in Rochester. There's things that and there's doctors. And so I'm being helped.
Mm-hmm. Bill, if you remember that diagnosis 5 years ago, what did you felt like you knew about Parkinson's, if much at all, at the time?
You know, I knew nothing. Yeah. You learn to it. And even in the early days, Flo had to continue to remind me, you don't have Parkinson's, you don't understand it. And she was so right. You can't walk in somebody's shoes when you really don't know what those shoes are. And early, she didn't show the same thing, a little stiffness of the arm. But there's a lot of other. They refer to it as a snowflake disease. Everyone's different. Yeah. Everyone shows different symptoms and how they do it. But it has effect on train of thought. It has effect on how you communicate. It really has a lot of effect. That as a caregiver, you just got to start looking through your loved one's eyes and understand that you got to be a different person. You got to be there. You got to be patient.
What does it mean to you, Flo, to have someone like Bill?
I mean, it's so amazing, Evan. I was worried at first because I could tell he didn't understand. And
how could he, right?
Right. Right, exactly. Thank you. And I was really worried, but I mean, because he loves me, he's fighting through this to understand and be patient and be the caregiver that he needs to be. And I am so lucky, Evan. I'm so lucky.
Evan, I'll give you an example. Flo is a quilter, and she does some amazing things. But because of the Parkinson's, it has restrained her ability to quilt. And what I've tried to encourage her to do, if it's only 5 minutes a day, if it's only 10 minutes a day, quilt. And she produces these quilts and talks about how long it takes. And I told her there's a lot of people without Parkinson's that could not generate what she's doing.
Yeah,
so,
right.
I mean, that's the type of support you got to be able to give and encourage them to do the maximum they can.
And have you found that you have bursts where you can quilt, you can still do that?
You know, Evan, and I believe it's the mind, too, that helps. Because with Bill's encouragement, some people would say, Flo, just give up. You know, just try another, help me out here, Evan, try another
hobby.
Thank you.
Activity, yeah.
Yeah. This isn't the Parkinson brain. So
don't make me laugh at you, Flo. Come on.
What else do we have?
No, I'm with you.
All right. So Bill was in my head. You know, mm-hmm. It was like, don't give up. Keep trying. So, Evan, here I am. I have paperweights on my fabric, you know, and I wear these gloves to help me that help with the shaking. And the paperweights help so that when I cut the fabric, the fabric doesn't move because of my shaking. And, reading these patterns and trying to figure out the sizes and stuff takes a long time because my brain freezes. But because of Bill in my head saying, do not give up. You can do it. I do it.
That's great.
And it really gives me a great feeling when I can finish one. And it's, you know, and it looks halfway decent. And the creativity part about it helps me, my brain, you know, inspires my brain and makes me think more about being creative.
You know, you told me that the first thing that you were thinking about with that diagnosis, the first fear you had was dying.
Yes.
Michael J. Fox is the person I mentioned because that's who we all think of. And I, you know, I'm sort of embarrassed by that, but it's just true. I mean, a lot of us understand that on the celebrity level, at least that's what we're used to seeing. And earlier this year, he was at Pomona College talking about how he's doing, he talked about a lot of different things, talked about politics, talked about Rush Limbaugh making fun of his tremors. And he said, look, I get it. I waited in the political arena. You know, it comes with the territory. And he talked about fear, about how some people are scared of dying and the isolation that can come because you feel like you're losing the ability to do what you wanted to do. And I want to listen to what Michael J. Fox said at Pomona that I thought was pretty remarkable. We'll get Flo's take on this next.
When I get up in the morning, my feet are cramped, and I shuffle, and I'm in danger of falling down, and I have to put on hard shoes to get my feet to conform. And it's just in the morning, it sucks. And I go and brush my teeth, and I have an electric toothbrush. It's just, but I don't have an electric toothbrush. And I'll go and get in the shower, and I'll kind of be all kind of crumpled up, and I'll sit on my little bench, and water will come down, and I'll wash my hair and get out and get dressed and walk out of my part of the bedroom where I dress. And there's a full length mirror there, and I'll look at myself all kind of crumpled up and rumpled and shaking and wet and miserable looking. And I'll say, "What are you smiling at?" And so I the smile is there whether, no matter what goes on. And it's I think that's one of the reasons why I was diagnosed 26 years ago, and they told me I'd have 10 years left to work. And it was just an emphasis, I think, with a lot of things. I have a good friend who had lymphoma, and years ago, and people say, how are you cured of cancer? And she said, I have cancer. I wasn't cured of cancer. I still have cancer. I'm living with cancer. I'm not dying from cancer. And that's the key. It's just that whatever these things, what's going to happen is going to happen.
It's Michael J. Fox saying that he had to come to that level of acceptance and not feel so frustrated, even just with getting his feet working in the morning, that he would just give up and be isolated. And I wonder what you think when you hear him describe that.
Well, I'm not there yet, Evan.
Right.
I have not accepted it yet. And I think it makes it harder on me because I am isolating myself at home. And I am embarrassed to be out in public and try to talk to people. And I feel it, Evan. I feel people are uncomfortable talking to me. And then I feel bad for them, you know? And I don't wanna make them uncomfortable. So yes, it is hard. And I need to accept it, and Bill tells me that too.
Yeah, I think that moment where he says he looked back at himself in the mirror and he said, "What are you smiling at?" He's essentially saying, "This is who I am, and that's okay. It's good. You know, I'm not going to allow that isolation." But Flo, I can't speak to your experience. So, you know, you can tell me what it's like. I just have to listen. It makes me very sad, though, to hear that you may limit your conversations in public with people because you're either embarrassed about yourself or you don't want to make them feel uncomfortable. And I just met you, but I would just try to express to you, I mean, you'd never have to apologize. And I don't know how to help other than to say, I want you to, you know, Bill's nodding over there, that we've got to find a way to build a community that says you don't ever have to be embarrassed about it, anything like that, you know? And it's tough, you know?
If I can chime in just a little bit, you know, this is one of the things that I do spend a fair bit of time talking to my patients about in clinic. And I've started reframing that journey of being out in the world with your symptoms. And the word I've been using with some folks is, as you know, be an ambassador for us. So if you kind of take it as you're going out into the world to help people understand this a little bit better, it sort of changes the relationship. In my clinic, I often turn Parkinson's into a third party. So I talk about the uninvited house guest. And, if we can, you know, hopefully keep him chained up in the corner with the treatments that I have available as a clinician for as long as possible to keep him out of your way. But, you know, there is a big element of separating yourself from this element that, you know, is it part of my identity? Is it part of who I am? Or is it a separate thing? And how do I negotiate that relationship? And so I think you're right that the more we demystify what this is all about, because people do live with this for 20 or 30 years, and we don't want people to spend that 20 or 30 years hiding themselves away. We want people to understand and accept and not be afraid of it, so that people remain engaged, because that's really what brings about the thriving that people can have. As Michael J. Fox was saying, you know, I'm still here, he's still working, you know, so people can keep, you know, kick and tail
sure.
for a long time.
Yeah, I had a friend who was in a car accident and suffered a traumatic brain injury and lived and almost did not, but her speech is forever impacted. It's monotonic. It has certainly slowed the speech, and a lot of people who meet her at first glance think that, you know, she might have a mental impairment or others, and she doesn't. She's brilliant. But for a while, it was just a decision of, we're not eating out. I can't even talk to a wait staff. We're just not going to do it. And now it's life. But it took a long time. I mean, that was 2003. So I guess I hear what you're saying, Flo, and I'm, yeah. You know, it's the same thing. Like Bill, you mean, we can't experience that.
Right,
but
right.
But what's that like for you to hear that?
Well, one of the things I wanted to say, though, as a community, I think we've isolated disease. But what you find out when you talk to people, everyone knows somebody who has Parkinson's. So it's not like it's, you know, that isolated. One of the things that I was impressed with coming on the foundation, we're focused on quality of life. There's others on care, but we're focused on quality of life for those with Parkinson's disease, but also with the caretakers. And, you know, that's as a community, there needs to be acceptance of it. It is a fact of life. You have it. And I can't imagine giving a diagnosis that I knew that there was no cure to. So I'm a firm believer of the glass is always half full, that you got to live your life, and the mental power of a disease is this. But I remember a time when somebody had cancer. It was, you know, it was feared as a death knell. There was no hope. So there's always hope with medicine and research.
And you are speaking broadly, and you're absolutely right. But in the case of Flo, you know, she says that there are times where she doesn't want to go out and just even talk to people in public for either her own embarrassment or concern that she'll put them in a hard spot. We got to work on this, Bill. I mean,
well, we're working on it. We're trying to do our vacations, and we're trying to do as much as we can while we can. And you know, when I tell her when we're out, she needs to be proud of who she is and what she is, and she should never be embarrassed by this curse she's had.
You know, Evan, and I so appreciate you having us on. But what I want to say is that I have Parkinson's. Yes, I have. There are times when the words don't come out. It's like my brain freezes. I know what the word I want to use is, but my brain won't let my mouth say it. I don't know. But I don't want people to think that I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, that's the embarrassment.
Yeah. No,
that's why I want people to know about Parkinson's, because...
Well, let me turn to Dennis, because now our phone's ringing. I didn't even mention the number, because our community is filled with a lot of people who want to share their own stories and at least, I think, relate to this. So if you're on the phone, I promise we'll get there. But I have to turn to Dennis Whitney just to briefly mention the fact that one of the reasons they're here, and we'll make sure we hit this a couple times this hour, is you got moving day coming up. What's coming up, Dennis?
That's right. Sunday, October 2nd at MCC Brighton Campus is our fifth annual moving day event. And it's really more than just a walk. It's an educational event. Certainly, we're anxious to raise funds to help our programs and the national. But we also have a moving pavilion, a movement pavilion, where we're going to demonstrate a lot of the movement actions that you can do. One of the things that we know works for Parkinson's to help prolong, keep the symptoms under control is exercise, movement. So we'll have some examples of yoga, Tai Chi, boxing, and access to a lot of the local programs that we have here. One of the things that I really love about our moving day is the Parkinson's experience. You had mentioned how difficult it is to be in somebody else's shoes. One of the difficulties for people with Parkinson's sometimes is getting started and moving. We have this Parkinson's experience that simulates some of the problems. And it's a pair of Velcro booties on a mat. And when you step on them and try to walk a mile in their steps, you don't move. You get that feeling of what it's like to be not have the full control. So several pieces like that. So, you know, go to our website, sign up. If you want to raise some funds and come out, that's fine. But you're welcome to come. This is a good chance to network and to see other people with Parkinson's and see that you can be out and in the community with Parkinson's.
That's on this coming Sunday.
This coming Sunday.
And again, where?
MCC Brighton Campus at 9 o'clock registration.
Okay, and the event goes until?
Until about noon.
Okay, about 9 until noon there. If you want to do that. So can you tell us a little bit about your story as well, Dennis, how it's impacted you?
Yeah, my wife, Louise, was diagnosed about 19 years ago. a little different than Flo's in that Louise was a geriatric social worker and had experience with Parkinson's, so she almost self-diagnosed. She had noticed that her one arm wasn't swinging when she walked. So she made an appointment with a doctor, with a neurologist, was confirmed. And her initial symptoms, mostly the slight tremor, a little bit of slow movement and fatigue and slow speech, but probably for the first 5 to 10 years, we considered it an inconvenience. We got the opportunity for an overseas assignment, and she took it, even though we were with that. I talked her into doing a 100-mile, 10-day Nepal trek, and she went through that. And I think that was part of what kept her going, the movements, the thing to do. And when we came back to the States, she resumed her work as a social worker. Had some of those issues that Flo was talking about. You know, what do you do as a social worker when you've got a tremor? You know, do you tell the patient, oh, that's just PD? Do you ignore it? How do you, she finally just says, you notice I got a tremor. I've got Parkinson's. Now let's talk about your problem. But hers, the movement didn't progress very much at all. With her, it started, the cognitive got worse. You know, she had to quit work because of inability to multitask. Being a social worker, it's kind of hard if you can only do one thing at a time. And now it has gotten to the point where it's primarily dementia. She's still very able to move very well. It's just now starting to get some gait or balance problems. But she has difficulty formulating sentences and sorting out words. Such that she really needs someone with her all the time. So hers is a little different path of it, more in the cognitive dementia issue.
Michelle, is that just another reminder that Parkinson's doesn't mean in 1 year A, then in 5 years B, and then in 10 years C?
Correct. I mean, what Bill said about it being snowflake disease is the nature of my job. The rate of progression is very different from person to person. Neurologists recognize Parkinson's by the two main changes in movement that are required for the diagnosis, which is stiffness of muscles, which in Dr. Ease we call rigidity, and a slowing down of movements, which can involve any part of the body. So the Dr. Ease word is bradykinesia, and depending on which part of the body it's affecting, it can manifest as that difficulty brushing teeth because the arms don't want to go back and forth. I have some folks who tell me, washing their hair in the back is difficult because you just can't get the movements big enough, scooching a chair or away from the table, standing up. Steps can become small. Handwriting can become very tiny and small. Voice can become very quiet and small. So, each individual patient, it might affect one body part and not another body part. So not everyone is going to have quiet speech. Not everyone is going to have walking problems. Things evolve over time. So you were talking about your friend with a traumatic brain injury. That's the kind of change in brain function that happens on one day.
Yes.
With Parkinson's, you're sort of getting reacquainted with the changes as things evolve over time. And so what's working 1 year, we may have to shift and do something a little bit different down the road. And that's where the impact on what are the things that I do that really matter the most to me, and what is it that we can do with treatments to try to push the symptoms back, and how those symptoms interface with our ability to interact with the world is also very different from person to person. But in general, it's not something where from the time of diagnosis, 5 years down the road, most people are in wheelchairs. That is not at all how this disease evolves. There is, through the National Parkinson's Foundation, a study where multiple Parkinson's centers of excellence that have been recognized for their excellence in Parkinson's care have been enrolling just anyone with Parkinson's disease, no specific requirements, and then following people over time. And we know that people who've had the disease for more than 10 years, 80% of folks are still walking after 10 years. So, when I first make the diagnosis, and people are shocked and they're horrified and they're worried, you know, what is the impact on my mortality? For the most part, especially when people are diagnosed with this in their 60s, it is not a big source of mortality. It changes, you know, an inconvenience, as Dennis said. You may have to change some of what you do, but it's not something that evolves so quickly that you're really changing how you live life in a short time horizon.
Which is why Bill Carpenter zeroed in on quality of life. Right, Bill?
Yes, absolutely, because, you know, it changes. It changes for the Parkinson's patient mainly, but it changes family and how you live. But it doesn't have to be all bleak and negative. I mean, you're living life, you're moving on, you find ways to deal with it. You know, Flo and I talk about the acceptance. And I've often said she's got to be able to look in that mirror herself and say, I have Parkinson's, and say it enough to herself where it's just our words, and try and get that. And it's in. So I think that it's we live with it, we move with it. You know, we've had great care in here in Rochester, through the U of R, their Center of Excellence, which just provides great service to us. But getting involved with the Parkinson's Foundation and finding and touching people and getting to talk to people. And as a caregiver, I need to encourage people to really reach out to the programs we have. We have a caregiver session that's done monthly to be able to talk to people in similar situations, because you get to a point as a caregiver you don't understand it. And by when you get together with people, then it helps to bring what you're seeing with other people going through the same things.
Sure. Yeah, Flo, is there one thing you wanted to say that drives you most nuts about Bill?
Oh, my goodness.
You don't have long enough.
It's not just one, Evan. But I do want to thank Dr. Michelle. She was right on those issues with Parkinson's. It's not just everything you said was perfect about. I mean, I felt like you were right on how I am developing. And thank you for understanding. And I just want people to know, don't be afraid of me.
Let's get our only break of the hour. And I know Bill in Brighton, Bud and Charlie, you've been waiting to jump into the conversation. We're going to come back to your phone calls. I want to remind you that on Sunday from about 9 to noon, out at the, Dennis, where is moving day?
MCC Brighton campus.
And do you have to sign up before you go?
You don't have to. We'd appreciate it. You can go to our website and sign up, but you're welcome to sign up the day of.
We're talking about not only moving day, but making our community more Parkinson's friendly, making sure people like Flo Dorsey, who is living with Parkinson's, understands that she never has to feel embarrassed about who she's talking to and how this community has nothing but love. And so Flo's here. Bill Carpenter, her husband's here. Bill is on the board. Dennis Whitney is the president of the National Parkinson Foundation of Greater Rochester. And Michelle Burak is here from the University of Rochester Medical Center. Your phone calls are next. Oh, and I should probably tell you what's coming up tomorrow. I guess that's my job. There is a show tomorrow, and we're excited to tell you about that. A Rochester native was a model of success, a high school graduate and Army veteran, but some bad decisions led to a prison sentence. Marcus Hill was accepted into the prison entrepreneurship program, which helped him turn his life around, open a business, and help other inmates. He's a featured speaker at an international entrepreneurship conference. It's going to bring 400 participants to Rochester this week. We will talk to him. Then second hour, County Clerk Adam Bellow's in. He's been talking about fee waivers, his concerns about that. It's been a bit controversial. You will hear from the county clerk tomorrow at 1. That's tomorrow. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and let me get to your phone calls. I know several have been waiting. Bill in Brighton. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi, Evan. I had an incredible experience with some good friends of mine who 10 years before their premier Greek restaurant closed, the husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and he every day appeared for work to cook. And after several months and several years, knowing the energy he was putting into these hours of going to his restaurant, he said, Bill, my goal in life is each day I am not going to be defeated by my joy of cooking by some disease. I am always going to cook. And eventually, at the very end, when his movements were more slow and deliberate, he was still putting out the most exquisite Greek food. And his sense of what the world was about and his vision of life would be an envy for all of us to follow. And I just wanted to communicate to you my personal experience with a triumphant person with Parkinson's.
Bill, that is a beautiful story. Thank you. Thank you for calling and sharing that. I don't know if any thoughts here on that. I'll let anybody want to jump in there.
Well, I say, give me some of that, okay?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I think it is so important that when people can retain their sense of value, you know, their sense of their own value, you know, those are the folks that I think manage this journey so much. And to anyone out there who's listening who is experiencing Parkinson's disease and has a hard time staying in touch with that core of yourself, you know, I see Parkinson's interfering with a lot of things that people enjoy doing, and we have to make sure that we don't confuse human doing with human being. And, you know, what's at the core of your being doesn't necessarily have to change as a function of Parkinson's.
Sure. And in this case, this is someone who had a very clearly defined passion. You know, Flo, you talked about quilting. Bill talked about your quilting and his urging you to make sure that you find some time and find a way to kind of stay in touch with that. And eventually maybe things change. I don't have any idea. I just know that maybe you and Bill can find ways to keep certain, you know, activities, interests alive in some sense, because I just thought Bill's phone call, that was beautiful. That felt like
it really was.
It felt like triumph, didn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I want to get back to the phone to 1 second. One quick note from a listener named Jennifer who writes the program and says, I hope that the doctor on the program will mention that the symptoms do not have to include tremors. My father had undiagnosed Parkinson's for many years. He could have benefited from treatment much earlier had he and we known. He certainly did not have any kind of tremors, but he did have Parkinson's.
Absolutely. You'll notice that the two symptoms that I said were required for diagnosis did not include tremor. So many people recognize Parkinson's by tremor, but about a third of people don't have tremor as part of the Parkinson's package. And so we can't rely on that as the signature for diagnosis. And it can take quite a while for it to be recognized unless it has some of those more obvious features that, you know, people in medical school are taught. You know, most people are seeing their primary care doctor, and unless people kind of pick up on, hey, this might be Parkinson's, let me send you to a neurologist to confirm or, you know, come up with a different answer. People can have shoulder pain from muscle stiffness that's not recognized as being caused by Parkinson's. People can have balance problems that gets misattributed to, you know, pinched nerves or other problems. So, you know, there is a certain amount of expertise required to recognize that unwanted houseguest for who he is. And, you know, a neurologist is certainly the person who's had the specialized training to really, you know, identify the diagnosis accurately.
I want to hit that point again. You said roughly a third of Parkinson's patients don't have tremors. Is that right?
At any point, correct. And then once it's treated, actually, you know, many people, their tremor just goes away and they don't have it again. So if you take a room full of people with Parkinson's, we may not even see a half their room manifesting tremor. The other comment I wanted to make is a lot of times, well, you know, if people are associating what Michael J. Fox looks like as the signature of the disease, most of the time when he's working, he is taking medication. And so the squirmy, fidgety movements that he has, the dyskinesias, are the signature movements with Parkinson's from the treatment. If you were to see him without the medication on board, he would be slow, he might have tremor, but he would look very different than we often see him because he's timing the work that he's doing to be at his most mobile state with the medication.
And people like me probably associate what we see with him with the disease, not with the treatment.
Right. And yeah. it's a combination of the disease and the treatment. So if I took that medication, I wouldn't wind up with those involuntary movements. It's the interplay between the treatments and how the disease evolves over time.
Okay.
So, you know, thinking that we can recognize Parkinson's when we see it, it's not necessarily tremor. The dyskinesias that we recognize Michael J. Fox for is not always the signature. We can, you know, if we see someone else with that, we might think, oh, that's what I've seen, someone with Parkinson's. But it can be as subtle as just a change in the way someone walks.
Mm-hmm. Flo, did you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I'm just so happy that finally we've discussed that Michael J. Fox is different. is not what you see Parkinson's really is.
Sure.
And I'm so happy because, oh, my God, I love Michael J. Fox, you know. But Parkinson's awareness is so important. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had a patient just a couple of weeks ago who was working with her daughter preparing for a wedding, and fatigue is a big component of what she struggles with. I say that when dopamine levels in the brain are low, and dopamine is the main neurotransmitter that people are losing in Parkinson's disease, your energy budget shrinks. So we give medications to try to boost dopamine, but the total energy budget may not necessarily become as infinite as we're accustomed to it being. And so she was very tired in the middle of doing all these wedding preparations, and she said that, you know, one of the people that was there said, "You don't look like you have Parkinson's disease." And, you know, if I had a dollar for every time I've heard a patient tell me, you know, that someone has said, "You don't look like you have Parkinson's disease."
Dr. Perrick, Michael J. Fox told Flo that when we met him right after she was diagnosed.
That you don't look like you have Parkinson's.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and what does that even mean, I guess, is the point. So Bud and Charlie's been waiting as well. Go ahead, Bud.
Well, this is a prelude. Evan, I don't know how you pick these topics. It's like there's a huge tree, and you always seem to pick the perfect topics that interest me. I just found out about six months ago that one of my college classmates had Parkinson. I was trying to track him down for a reunion this year, and nobody could find him, and I found him out in a nursing home in Wayne County. And he has an advanced stage. I have been out there a few times. His problem, he would like to talk. He can hardly talk. I reasoned that if he used one of the devices that is for laryngectomies, the vibrator might help him and I managed to borrow one from a neighbor who has a couple, and he's confused about how to use it. I asked him, well, show it to your speech therapist, and maybe they can help you use it. Maybe you can practice on the nurses or something. And he says the speech therapist doesn't think much about those things. And I thought, good grief. And I am too far away to be his caregiver. I mean, I would love to do it if he lived next door, but it's too far. I'd just like to know, is there any way that somebody outside of the nursing home environment could go and visit him and give him some encouragement and maybe, you know, see what they could do to direct help for him?
All right, Bud, stay on the line. Dennis, I'll start with you. Go ahead.
Unfortunately, the first place we would probably look for something like that would be a speech therapist. We have several speech therapists. You know, there are a couple that work for a couple of the home health agencies that have experience with that. So it might be possible to get in touch with one of those agencies, and they might have some ideas that maybe a speech therapist not as familiar with Parkinson's might be able to do to help with.
Okay. He is in Wayne County.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of the ones, I believe, either HCR or Lifetime Care work in Wayne County, and I might talk.
Right.
You might touch with one of them.
I don't know if I can make it Sunday. It's so close to church. But if I contact you through your website, could we continue a conversation?
Yeah, I think if you send a note to contact@npfgreaterrochester.org, we can put you in touch with a couple people that might be able to give you some help.
Oh, that would be great. I want to help this guy.
Yeah, and it is a difficult one. I have not seen very many successful technologies that seem to help that.
Michelle, hold on, Bud.
Stay, was working on it.
Bud, stay there for 1 second. Michelle Burek, go ahead.
I just wanted to, you know, highlight that the story that you're telling, you know, really speaks to a theme of people's network of support, and you know, how well they can do depends a lot on, you know, who do they have in their camp to advocate. And so this is where, you know, he's very lucky to have you to speak up for him and help him, you know, potentially troubleshoot and identify some additional resources. And this is where my involvement with the National Parkinson's Foundation of Greater Rochester has really meant a great deal to me. I moved here from St. Louis. I had been involved in the support organization there. And it is just a tremendously remarkable community of individuals in the community providing support for each other, you know, that there's this very robust network, that people aren't relying just on the one person in their household as a care partner, that we can really share tips with each other, you know, through our collective knowledge base. It's almost like, what's that? Oh, see, Flo, it's not just you. That word finding thing is very normal. We can crowdsource, yeah, in a way, a lot of the solutions to these things. And so, you know, anything that you can do to help grow your friend's network of support will be very much appreciated, I'm sure.
Good luck, bud.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the phone call. And on the subject of support, Misty on Twitter was just asking if there are specific support groups available for people with Parkinson's and for caregivers. So, Dennis, you want to take that one?
Yes, we're continually revamping the support group system to make sure we're meeting the right needs. As Bill mentioned earlier, there's a caregiver support group that meets monthly. That meets on the second Saturday. Rather me try to remember exactly when they do. They're on our website, but there is a caregiver support group. The ones that we have just starting is there's a 7-week series for newly diagnosed people. Dr. Burak runs a 3-month Parkinson's 101, 201, 301 education series to kind of answer all those questions that you can never have time to answer in a neurologist's office or you remember just after you leave. So along with that, we have this support group to help people process that. And then there's a maintenance support group for those people. And there are several other support groups around the area, even a couple out of area, Canandaigua. So if you go to our website or give us a call.
What's the website again?
Website is npfgreaterrochester.org.
npfgreaterrochester.org. Flo?
Yes, Evan, I'd like to say caregivers are so important. And don't be afraid. Don't say you don't have time. Get help. Get support with this group here that Dennis talked about. It's so important to us Parkinson's people. And I'm just so grateful they're out there, and I'm grateful for Bill that is my caretaker.
And, you know, Flo, when you got that diagnosis 5 years ago now, how much did you want to talk to people with Parkinson's? Because, again, you expressed, you've had those moments with Bill where you said, you know, you can't understand it. You don't have Parkinson's. How much did you find yourself wanting to talk to other people who do have Parkinson's?
You know, Evan, that's kind of a hard question because I wanted to, but I was afraid, Evan. I myself was afraid because I saw myself being those people that who have Parkinson's that I haven't actually believe in myself that I have it, but seeing other people that have it and trying to talk to them made me feel like that's who I was going to be. And that's,
you didn't want it. You didn't want
I couldn't. It's hard to deal with. Yeah. But I'm better now.
I know the format here is that callers call in with questions, but I'm going to flip the tables a little bit. I would love if there are people out there listening with Parkinson's, especially if you're newly diagnosed or reflecting back on when you're diagnosed, since we as a chapter really want to make sure that we can reach out and you know, provide the educational information and other resources that the chapter has to offer when you're in that stage where it's so hard to process the diagnosis and so hard to accept the diagnosis. What can we do as a chapter to be more accessible to you and to make it less daunting, right, to approach the concept that this disease is now part of your life?
You're not alone. You're alone.
No.
There are
so
people there to help.
If anybody has, you know, advice for us on that, I would love to hear perspectives on what other things we can do to make it a welcoming environment.
And listeners, there's lots of ways to do that. I mean, I know we've got tens of thousands of people listening right now, and maybe, you know, maybe you know someone who's a new diagnosis. Maybe you are have a new diagnosis yourself. You can call this program. We got about 8 minutes left. But before we do that, I'll also mention, if you want to go out on Sunday, go out to Moving Day. Yeah. So Dennis Whitney, again, for our listeners who are kind of coming into the program, we've been talking about Parkinson's and the community that we have in Rochester to support people with Parkinson's and their caregivers. You got an event on Sunday called Moving Day. What's coming up?
Yeah, it's Moving Day, with the theme being moving keeps you active with Parkinson's, keeps some of the symptoms at bay. It's also an opportunity to connect with our organization, with some of the programs, understand what we have, meet with other people. So if you're at all available, come out Sunday morning to MCC at 9 o'clock. The walk starts at 10:30, but from 9 to 10:30, there will be movement demonstrations, and there's activities for the children, so you can bring the whole family. There's a bounce house, so the kids will be entertained for all the time you want to have extra time. Also, please drop us a note on our website, contact@mpfgreaterrochester.org. As Michelle said, what is it that we can do that would make it easier for you? And also our phone line, 234-5355. Give us a call.
Evan, I have something I want to say. If you can't come out on Sunday, go on the website. There are teams that you can donate to. You can donate your money. And I want to do a shout-out to my nephew who has Parkinson's, and that is Gerard Porter and his wife, Lindsay Porter, who have a team. And if you can't make it, go ahead and donate to their team. It's Porter Power Team.
Awesome.
Bill, you want to add to that there?
She says it best. That's what I love about Flo. Her enthusiasm hasn't ebbed. She still has that zest for life, and I love her dearly. And what I know is we have a long time to go. We have a lot of things to do together, and we're looking forward to doing those.
Michelle, go ahead. You want to jump in?
I wanted to chime in a little bit about the research since you led off with it. I think it's the University of Iowa, some new results. And, I am obviously through my role in the university, very involved in the research efforts toward improving care for the disease, as well as, many of my colleagues who are working on trying to find something that stops the disease in its tracks. And what is an under-recognized piece of this is that people already have something that they can do to stave off progression of the disease, and that's being active. And so the reason we're making a big deal about moving day and movement is that we don't need to wait for my colleagues to come up with the pill that's, going to postpone the milestones that we want to, push off into the future as far as possible. We have some medicine right now. It just doesn't come in pill form, and it's called activity.
Exercise. How significant is it?
So it's very difficult to run a randomized controlled trial of disease progression, of even for a pill.
Especially for a snowflake disease.
And
right?
For a snowflake disease. And so for something like activity, which kind of activity are we going to do? But it's clear, and we have wonderful data from animal models where we know that couch potato rats lose more brain cells than rats that run on treadmills. So to the degree that we can extrapolate from rats to humans, we have very solid animal data. And then in, human epidemiological studies, people who are more active have slower progression than people who are less active. And so, I know a lot of people kind of interface with the medical universe, and I've heard doctors referred to as pill pushers, and as much as I do appreciate the therapies that I have in my toolbox that come in pill form, I am a big pusher of exercise as something that can truly alter the course of the disease. And I think one of the reasons why a lot of the older studies about how Parkinson's progresses and how fast it progresses, we have to throw all those data out now, because the levels of care that people are getting and the kinds of interventions that people are getting, including, it's now a quality metric for Parkinson's care that we talk about exercise.
Any form of exercise better than the others?
So, we haven't had any formal study of one versus the other than there's some comparative trials for specific outcomes like preventing falls. In terms of altering the progression of the disease, I think what's most important is it's something that you like to do, that's accessible to you, because if you pick the most fancy pants exercise regimen in the world that might be great for Parkinson's, but you can't do it because you don't have the equipment or you don't like it, that's not going to do you any good. Yeah. So something is better than nothing. I like to emphasize variety, because novelty is another thing that really gets brain cells excited. So doing the same walk every day over and over and over again, as opposed to dry boxing for a while and then try Tai Chi for a while and then do yoga for a while.
Or if you're going to walk, change your walk route?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mother Nature is a wonderful source of unpredictability. And so, when that albino squirrel runs across the trail, or you see an owl, or, you know, those are just little sparks that make brain cells very happy. And so being out in Mother Nature, being social, those are all things that I think people don't leverage enough when they're thinking about how can I push back against this disease.
Bill Carpenter, you want to weigh in there?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, one of the things that's impressed me with Flo is she's done a lot of research. She's really taken upon her to understand it. But she also didn't tell you she's biking 10 to 15 miles a day, and I think that's helped her, in her progression, and it's good for her. It's one of her other passions. So the fact is she's out there, and I think it shows how much exercise is important to this.
Does it bother you? I mean, it sounds you love doing it.
I do, and it makes me feel so much better right after, and I feel so different the couple hours after I've done it. Yeah, a lot of endorphins in there that I need.
Is it a daily routine? Are you doing it in the morning?
Let's say I was doing it in the morning, mm-hmm. and because I've been trying with my quilting, I need to do it in the morning when I first take my medicine and start the day fresh.
Yep.
But now I've been doing it in the afternoon, so yes, I have switched it.
I just want to say, as we get ready to wrap the hour here, Flo, I find your story, and please don't take this as anything close to patronizing or trite. I mean this when I say I find it inspiring. There have been several moments where I've looked over, and producer Megan McEnany and I have caught each other's eyes just to how remarkable you
really
are. And so I just hope that you feel that, that you can push away from that isolation that may be more common for people in Parkinson's, and understand that this is a community that wants you to feel that way. So anyway, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan, and thank you for letting me and these people here today talk about Parkinson's awareness.
We think your husband's okay, too.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Carpenter's on the board.
I do love him.
Thank you. Bill, Flo, thank you. And good luck to both of you.
Evan, thank you.
And I know, as you say, Bill, it's going to be a long journey together. So thank you very much. Michelle, thank you for your expertise. Great. And Dennis, one more time, people want to see you on Sunday. Moving day is Sunday. Where is it?
MCC, Brighton campus at 9 a.m.
Thank you for being here, and good luck to you as well, Dennis.
Okay, and thank you for having us, Evan.
You got it. Thanks to all the interaction, both hours today, from our audience. Wonderful stuff today. Rob Braden's the engineer, and Megan Mack is the producer of this broadcast. I'm Evan Dawson, and we'll talk with you Thursday on Member Supported Public Radio.